Liveline on RTE Radio 1 with bonkers.ie, Ireland's favourite comparison and switching website. Visit bonkers.ie today and start saving on your household bills.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
It began with a call earlier on the week. It's about the election and the fact that people with eating disorders, of which we're told at any one time there could be up to 200,000 there, and they're only pointing out, Paula was and her family, there are only 3 beds in Ireland ring-fenced for people with eating disorders. And then that unleashed a slew of promises made in 2018 and before to people with eating disorders. The Taoiseach has requested the Department of Health to contact the HSE to ensure appropriate assistance is offered to Daniela as a matter of urgency. The HSE will continue to engage with Daniela in order to offer her the appropriate support and treatment. I'm sure the Taoiseach did contact the Department of Health, but the money isn't there because, as Daniela's mother Joyce pointed out yesterday, they didn't get any help, urgent or otherwise, and she ended up having to go to England and paying for most of it herself, as most people have, and going private, which most people have. And if you heard the stories over the last few days of people's efforts to try and get help, because the wonderful thing about this aspect of the mental illness, if wonderful is the right word, is that there is a way through it. It can actually, with proper specialised treatment and therapies, you can actually come through anorexia. That needs to be pointed out again and again. Eimear Healy. Eimear, good afternoon.
Hi, Joe. How are you?
And that is your main point, isn't it? That you can come through with proper help.
Yeah, Joe. I suppose, just listening to the programme yesterday, I felt really compelled just to send you in a little email. I suppose just offering the message of hope, you know, not to give up hope for anyone suffering from an ED or care or family or friends. Having gone through it myself, you know, through recovery and coming out the other end, full recovery from an eating disorder is most definitely possible. And
right,
when
right.
I say fully free, I mean free in myself and mm-hmm. free in my body and around food. And so that was really the main reason I just wanted to contact you. Yeah.
And the eating disorder dogged you for I know you're still very young, you're only 36, but dogged you for a significant part of your life from early on.
Yeah, it did, Joe. I guess initially I definitely would trace it back to as young as 7. Just in relation to the thoughts more so about myself and like certainly not feeling good enough or, you know, pretty enough or whatever it was. And there was always sort of a underlying kind of control over food and I was active in one thing another. But everything kind of exploded then in the year of my leaving cert. So I was about 17. Mm. And for the next 10 years, really, Joe, I was in and out of every treatment centre going. I spent time in St. Pat's. I was in Tabor Lodge. It's an addiction, a 12-step addiction treatment centre in West Cork. I did 3 months here in my local acute unit in a psychiatric ward, sitting on a bed, no movement, having to use the toilet facilities in front of the nurses. I wasn't allowed to shower. So I journeyed through all of that. And even though I suppose I was... that's the word, the help was there and I was in it, it never felt right. And I mm-hmm. guess it always addressed the symptom, and I think that's what a lot of your callers mentioned yesterday, you know, it was always focusing on the food, and if you just eat X, Y, and Z, you'll be fine, you know. But I knew deep down that wasn't it. Like, there had to be something else. Like, I was doing that to a point and then I was still feeling miserable and whatever. So I came out of the acute unit and I went back to college and mm-hmm. eventually I was doing my final year teaching practice here at home in Ennis, and I just had enough. I had enough of starving myself, I had enough of the behaviours, X, Y and Z, of thinking so negatively. And so I rang Marino Therapy Centre in Dublin and I contacted
Marino,
them. And I went to see them, up to see Jerry and Marie. And I'd say here at home at that point, they were like, oh, here she goes again, you know, because... like, God love my parents, we had 10 years worth of really, really, really deep darkness. Like, it was just mm-hmm. horrific. Like, and I think as well, just listening back yesterday, like, I could nearly sense the hell that all those people were in, the darkness, the despair, you know, trying to get facilities, you know, for the sufferer and maybe the sufferer not taking on the help, because it's such a very what's the word? I nearly describe it like it's like an onion. You know, you just, there's so many layers to it, and trying to recover out of it, it's so scary to take that first step to admitting that, yes, first of all, I need help. Mm-hmm. This thing that I thought for so long that I had control over everything else was so untrue. It had so much control over me in my thinking and how I was in life. So anyways, I contacted Marino and I went to see them, and even though, and I want to point this out as well, even though I had been to see them after I had left St. Pat's, after I had come out of that treatment program, at that point in time, if I'm really honest, I still was not ready to give up the condition. And I think one of your callers mentioned it yesterday. It starts out like a very positive relationship, this thing comes into your life, and it's all wonderful, and you dance with it, and that's how I describe it. It's like a dance, you know, for a while, and you're delighted with life and maybe how you're feeling and X, Y, and Z. But slowly but surely, naturally enough, the body starts to, you know, it's not able to kind of keep up with the lack of nourishment and the behaviours and whatever. And slowly but surely, you lose complete control, and this has full control over your life. And I felt when I walked through the doors of Marino Therapy Centre, they got that straight away. Even though, yes, the food was a very important part of the recovery, they so focused on myself. Who was Eimear? And therein begins my journey to recovery and to full freedom. We're now, like, as I said to your researcher earlier on today, like, I don't even think about food. I have three small children, thankfully, here at home. They're 4, 2, and 8 months.
Wow.
And I am so grateful for the life that I have now. And that's my one big message. Like, I mean, I went from a point where, you know, my parents were asked to pick out a grave for me to where I am today.
Yeah.
And it took work. It took determination. It took so much trust. Oh, my God, the fear, Joe. The sheer fear and anxiety, like, you know, of, oh, you've no idea. Some days, like, you know, I'm after putting butter on my brown bread, and that would melt your head for the day. Do you know, like, it sounds in such a way like it's so minuscule, but like, it's such a strong illness, and I don't think anyone understands that until it's at your doorstep and you actually realize.
And to come back, Eimear, to and thank you for that, but to come back to the, who, look, we've heard very good feedback about Lois Bridges, this new centre out in Howth. It's private, and that's where the first call, Paula couldn't get money. The family has spent 25,000-26,000 so far, and she's only halfway through it. Who paid for the Marino clinic?
My parents, and all along, like, I'm forever indebted, Joe. I'm always wishing I'd win the lotto at this stage to pay them back.
Well, why wouldn't, given that it is such a severe condition, it's a health condition, it's a mental health condition, it's a condition that can that people can die from and have died from. How come the state didn't pay for, or partially pay, or in some, why didn't the state help you with the payment for the Marino clinic?
I think, Joe, it's kind of like a bit of, you know, an elephant in the corner, an eating disorder, because even though it is a mental health illness, somewhere along the line it doesn't seem to fit into the tick the box or the bracket as does, you know, and I don't wish to diminish, but, you know, depression, anxiety or alcoholism or gambling. And in fact, it is there. Like, I mean, it is a mental health illness. To be honest, I don't know, Joe. I really don't. I mean, my parents, and I don't know how they did it, like, but, you know, Tabor Lodge was paid by them. I think my dad may have gotten some funding for the time I spent in St. Pat's Hospital. Eventually, only through his sheer determination towards the end of my treatment in Marino. Now, by the end of my treatment, I mean, I had moved from Ennis up to Dublin. And so I was going into Marino every single day. So towards the latter point of that, we eventually, only through his own determination, we got some element of support. But it took a lot of letters. It took for me nearly to prove my commitment to getting well, that they allowed some degree of funding towards Marino.
And I know some people might think it's a cheap point, but I'm genuinely shocked, and I think a lot of people are, to discover, given the extent of this illness and the good prospect with proper specialised treatment that it can be dealt with, that there are only three beds, and the HSE sent us in that statement, yeah, that there are only three beds, ring fenced was their phrase, in St Vincent's Hospital in Dublin, and of course you have to be in a catchment area, I presume. Now they say they do help out in private facilities, but now I know people think this is a cheap point, and we're told the Taoiseach promised 2 years ago, Jim Daly, the Minister for Mental Health, promised 4 years ago, whatever. But like this afternoon, the government have found money for the FAI. They found a lot of money for the FAI this afternoon. And some of it's interest-free loans, but some of it's direct grants. Now, I know the football on the ground is really, leagues are really important, but there's money there if people only bring this issue into the mainstream. Because one call we got this morning, Eamon, the family were so distressed. They fought so hard to get funding for treatment for their sister. So hard. Yeah. We heard of a family yesterday who went to court to try and get help, and they were successful. Yeah. But imagine the stress. I can't imagine the stress in your family, but the stress on that family having to go to court, as well as the stress of having a member of the family with anorexia. Her sister had anorexia. They fought long and hard to get funding. They eventually got it. But her sister died before the treatment could be availed of. She died through suffering through anorexia. Let me bring James in, 51551. James, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe.
Did you get help from the HSE? I'll go through your situation in a sec, but did you get help from the HSE, and how did you have to fight for your daughter, Emma?
Well, in short, we did get help from the HSE, but that was after 7 months of my daughter being in a paediatric hospital, and then when the condition got to such a state. I have to say from the outset that the expertise, awareness and understanding of eating disorders is just not available in this country at the moment, and we need to get down to the brass tacks of it. So eventually, after 7 months in a paediatric hospital, my daughter was transferred not once but twice to the UK, and in the first year of transfer, we had a nightmare dealing with the services here, trying to secure the funding for my daughter's treatment in the UK.
And how did it... I know Fianna Fáil said they will double it, and in fairness, Fine Gael are using it, the current government, but there is a treatment abroad scheme.
Well, I can put it this way, Joe. I dealt with all the services, and to put it into some type of perspective, I spent nearly, 5.5 years... waiting on the results of an independent systems review of my daughter's case. I lodged a letter of complaint in October 2015, and I got a response to that independent systems review of my daughter's case 2 weeks ago. Okay, now I can tell you, and I don't want to go into the details of what's in that report, but I have an official response back from the HSE on this. The simple facts of the matter are that the expertise, awareness and understanding is not in this country. Departments do not work together. They're all working to different agendas. And the last person that's thought of in these situations is the child. You know, where Ireland right now is in direct contravention on the UN Convention on the Rights of the Child under Article 12 and in other aspects of the UN Convention on the Rights of the Child as well. But right now we need to get down and recognise, and the government needs to recognise. And we have two ex-ministers for health, going to be on a podium tonight. They should really, really hang their heads in shame. What is being allowed to happen to children in this country right now? There is a tsunami heading our way. And when we were in the depths of our situation back in 2014, I think the Irish Times ran an article at that time saying that there was upwards of 350,000 people affected. And, 10% of that figure would be young boys. So everyone knows it's coming down. Yeah. The services know, but regrettably, the infrastructure, the expertise is just not there. And I think the GPs know that. I think the CAMHS teams know that. I think the paediatric hospitals know that.
When your daughter was in a paediatric hospital, when she had what was the treatment in there?
Look, I'll put it very bluntly to you. In paediatric hospitals, as paediatric hospitals, provide a wonderful service.
Yeah, yeah.
Paediatric hospitals trying to deal with psychiatric illnesses are completely out of their depth. Now, that's paediatric hospitals mightn't agree with that, mightn't accept it, but that's the long and the short of it. Paediatric setting is a wholly unsuitable environment for treating a psychiatric condition. And everyone knows that. I mean, the nurses will tell you, if you speak to nurses, they will tell you, the doctors, I'm sure, will tell you. It's, you know, a paediatric environment is wholly unsuitable. No ifs, no buts, no maybes.
Let me bring in Virginia Linehan. Virginia, good afternoon.
Hi, good afternoon, Joe.
And your situation and your story. Start wherever you wish, Virginia. Go ahead.
Yeah, Joe, I was just speaking to your researcher. I suppose I was compelled, like your previous caller, Emer, to just throw some positive light on the experience to say that you know, there's potential for a full recovery, a complete full recovery, and it's not something that an eating disorder stays with you for the rest of your life, or that it will define you, or that it'll never go away. You know, you can live a very full and fruitful life, as I have, and I can say that that's the message that I wanted to say, just like Emer, that you can make the full recovery, and it's, you can have, you know, you can enjoy life, you can enjoy relationships, you can go out to restaurants, and food is no longer something that's something that you fear or something that you need to control. And that was my message to you know, the people who are in distraught, especially the man whose daughter's in, and the dad there, his daughter is experiencing. And my heart goes out to them. But for me, it was, first I developed an eating disorder at 19. And I think everything just came crashing down around me at 36. excuse me. When it kind of came to a head, whereby I was just kind of in a state where I was just completely broken down, and I knew I needed treatment. So then I went into the EDP ward in St. Pat's, and at the time, I didn't realise the benefit of the treatment. I felt I didn't belong there. I didn't, you know, I wasn't part of this. I didn't really have a problem. But just to say that there were kids in there. There was like 15 and 16 year olds there. It was that there was a student doctor in there. There was a nurse in there. It's non-discriminatory, and it doesn't target any specific person or any specific social demographic, but it's a very real illness, but it is absolutely treatable, and it's absolutely, you can make a full recovery, and that's my message.
And is there, in terms of, again, to come back to the issue of funding and where the treatment centres are, how did you do on that front, Virginia?
Yeah, well, look, you know, I was extremely fortunate in that we had VHI, and it there was full cover.
But if people don't have VHI, they're in difficulty.
They're in extreme difficulty.
Okay,
say
with us, 51551.
Joe Duffy.
Talk to Joe on 1850-715-815.
And Joe at rt.ie and 51551 is our text number. Emmett, good afternoon.
Joe, how are you?
How are you doing? It's unusual in that, in one sense, you're a missing voice from this discussion, because you are a man suffering from an eating disorder.
Yeah, that is. Sorry, bear with me, Joe. I'm a little bit nervous, but it's something I've been listening to the conversations throughout the week, and I suppose the first thing I wanted to say to everyone was that I'm so immensely proud of everyone who has spoken on the radio this week and spoken on behalf of people with eating disorders, their families and everyone, because it's a demon. It's a demon that takes over everyone. You know, you think of those 200,000 people in the country suffering from an eating disorder, and then multiply that by four when you think of all their families, and that's the amount of people it affects. So I think that's the first thing I wanted to say, was just that I'm so proud of them all for speaking out on it. And for me, it was just the one little thing that stuck with me throughout the week was, the missing voice of the male in the scenario, not as a family member, but as a person who suffers with an eating disorder. They are there, and I'm one of them. And I just feel that they maybe are a bit afraid to speak out. It's a silent voice. I don't necessarily say that it's a stigmatized voice, but I think the stereotype that's there is the female, the young female, the young teen boy, maybe. I'm 36 years old. I'm heterosexual. When I developed my eating disorder and I went looking for information, I couldn't find anything that related to me. I couldn't find any relatable story, any relatable person out there. It was a very lonely place to try and, you know, find information. So I'm still in treatment. I'm still going through the motions. I did 3 months of residential treatment in Lowe's Bridges, and that was really successful. I'm still, you know, 3 months later, I'm still doing weekly therapy, weekly groups, seeing a dietitian, all of that kind of stuff. And I just wanted to, I suppose, speak out for the other males that are there in the country and that maybe feel like they can't speak, and to tell them that don't be afraid, you know, no matter what age you are, don't be afraid and don't give up. When my eating disorder, I suppose, is a little bit unusual in that it's been very acute. I developed it much later in life, only about a year and a half ago. It was something that took me completely by surprise. I'd never had issues with food before. I never had any sort of a dieting culture or anything like that. But what happened was it started as a healthy eating regime. I just decided I wanted to be a bit healthier in my life. And I enjoyed the start of it, but then it got dirty and nasty. And then it took over. What it did do is it gave me, and I think someone mentioned it earlier on there, it gave me a friend in a way, a friend that I could trust. I mentioned to your researcher this morning, it got to the point where it felt in my life that the only factual thing I could trust was the number on the scale, which was a horrible thing. When you have a partner beside you, you have a supporting family around you, you have friends and everyone, and you just feel so lonely. You feel like, you know, you don't know what to trust. And then the hardest thing from that was, and I was trying to count back on it, but I think it was about 13 or 14 different professionals I had to tell my story to and try in a way, because I didn't want to admit I had an eating disorder. You don't want to admit it, but at the same time, I was reaching out for help. And I got turned away so many times by so many different avenues, and we just didn't know where to go. And that gentleman, James, that was speaking there a little while ago, but the lack of joined up thinking, the lack of information in this country is just dire. There is amazing people out there, and I don't want to dismiss any one of them. My therapist, she's a living angel. Without her, I don't know if I'd still be here. But the joined up thinking between the time that I spent in hospital and the time that I then had to get referred to community mental health.
And why did you end up in hospital? Because you say your obsession was healthy food, but it went out of control.
To explain it in a bit more detail, it was anorexia aligned with what's called orthorexia. Orthorexia is... So anorexia is, I think as we've discovered this week, is severe restriction, wanting to lose weight, a fear of body image and things like that. Orthorexia then is very much aligned to extreme healthy eating, extreme, you know, fear of what goes into food, what is your dinner made up of, and it needing to be ultra clean, ultra healthy. So between the two of them, I lost a significant amount of weight, probably about a third of my body weight, in a very, very short space of time. And I developed all of the typical physical symptoms and mental symptoms that someone with anorexia develops, not knowing what any of this was. And it was actually through, and I won't mention anything in too much detail because I don't want to trigger anyone. It was through one of the things that was helping me to maintain the behaviors that I learned that I had an eating disorder. It was pure fluke. And the minute I discovered it, I admitted it to my partner, and we then admitted it to my family, and we sought help. I found an amazing GP. Without him, this whole process wouldn't have started. My original GP way back last year told me to eat a few extra nuts and berries for breakfast. That was the response I got. But this GP saw there was something wrong. So he initially sent me into Connolly for some medical tests. We tried to get me into a few other hospitals first. They wouldn't admit me. Eventually, Connolly took me in, and I spent 2.5 weeks in there doing medical tests just to make sure there was nothing otherwise, even though I knew what it was.
And Lowe's Bridges for 3 months. Do you want to tell me who paid for that? It's a private facility.
One of the things we decided was, because I'm still in treatment, that's something my partner and my family have dealt with. I don't actually know the ins and outs of
okay,
that.
Okay, well,
The only thing want to mention on that, Joe, is, and this was something very important, because I have VHI healthcare, and I've been paying it for God knows how many years at this stage. But it turned out at the start of this whole scenario that it wouldn't cover Lowe's Bridges. It would cover inpatient mental health cover in a public hospital. Yeah. I couldn't understand why I was paying private healthcare and only getting covered in a public hospital.
But as you say, between your GP, therapist, Lowe's Bridges, you're moving onwards.
I am.
Yeah, great.
I am, slowly but surely. Okay. I can see a bit of light at the end of the tunnel, but it's a rocky road, Joe. Yeah. it really is. And I would just hate for another man to be sitting there somewhere hearing all the voices this week, who I would not dismiss any one of them, but just to be afraid to not speak out himself.
So you're not the only one. Emmett, thanks indeed, and thank you for your contribution and everyone else's contribution, and indeed the people I won't be able to get to today anyway. 51551.